So yesterday we heard Kunti explaining how Krishna is bewildering to the non-devotees. Because he acts, although he is inactive. Because he's born, although he's unborn. And the most bewildering thing about Krishna is how he is subordinate to his devotees' love. How he's afraid of Yashoda, although fear personified is afraid of him. So now Kunti will show how people have many opinions as to why Krishna comes to this world. So before we start, we'll go over our homework. Yesterday we had the question, how is Krishna's mercy coming to you in your life? And that was for yesterday. So did anybody have some experience yesterday? Or a realization on that point of mercy? Yeah.
Well, it was this morning after like another rough night, and I was feeling really desperate. I was like, oh, I can't cope, you know. And then I felt like the presence of the devotees, very strong, the mercy of the devotees, and it was really, really sweet. And that was like really.
Okay, yeah. Another sleepless night, usual, and. And you have to get up and early and take care of Krishna, and you felt the mercy of the Lord. Yeah. Good.
And also in the service of Krishna, but especially sweet.
Especially sweet because of the mercy of the Lord. Yeah. Good. Yeah, we had a good day yesterday. People were really helping us a lot, you know, just not devotees, just ordinary people. And we even think the taxi driver reduced the fare for us. It couldn't have been as cheap as it was. We couldn't believe it. You know, from, where is it, Anderson to downtown, £4? I don't think so. On a regular taxi, you know, a private taxi. So it was the whole day was like that, actually. That we were just, and we were remembering Krishna's mercy the whole day. Think, oh, this is Krishna's mercy. Oh, this is Krishna's mercy. Every time something would happen, we would think about, oh, this is Krishna's mercy. Even we had to wait a long time for the taxi, but it was worth the wait. So then we went to Harinam, and that was the best mercy. That was really
that was
nice.
Mercy on us. We felt energized.
And so Americans came and gave some dollars. And they had, oh no, it wasn't Americans, they were Irish who went to visit America, was it?
Yeah, and they had dollars. They said, oh, we were wondering what to do with the dollars, and then we saw you, and oh, these are the perfect people to give a dollar. And I said, see that lady, she's going to America in a few weeks. Oh, we'll dinner for her especially. So whoever has these dollars at the moment, they have to get them.
Anyway, whatever. So that was we had a very interesting, we could really see the mercy throughout the whole day yesterday. It was just flowing. Mercy was flowing. And it was amazing. Actually, it started the day before, but it didn't. And it kept on going. So hopefully it'll keep on going today too. Okay, anybody else have something, mercy that happened yesterday? And If you didn't have mercy, the second question was, is there some mercy you're reluctant to receive? Yes?
Can I just ask what I was thinking about, and nothing special happened or anything?
Yeah.
Is there a tendency to think that we get Krishna's mercy if we get something for free?
Right.
Or if something good happens.
Right, exactly.
That we hadn't planned. Whereas, you know, like...
If something bad...
Just thinking of an example... Do you know what I mean?
Like yeah. Well, that was
also everything is Krishna's mercy. That if something happened, but it was actually planned because Krishna gave us the intelligence to plan it properly. That's also
exactly right. Very good. Very good point. That if things come out, because actually for the results we have to depend on Krishna. We do our best and we endeavor, but for the results, it's Krishna. Was there any? Yeah.
Can I ask you a question on that? Because it's something that, you know, I think about quite a lot. And one question I've had, and I think you're probably the perfect person to answer it, is what is the difference between depending on Krishna's mercy and being irresponsible?
Okay, what is the difference between depending on Krishna's mercy and being irresponsible? Well, being irresponsible means you expect Krishna to do everything, including the work. Of course, he is doing the work, but we think we're doing it. But nothing will happen unless we endeavor. We went actually over that in yesterday's class, that unless we endeavor, our destiny will not even come, actually. We have to endeavor. We might be destined to get some money, and it will fall in front of us, or it'll come right in front of us. But unless we stoop down to pick it up, we won't get it. So you have to endeavor. Or like Prabhupada gives the example, there's a gold mine under your feet. You say, well, I have a gold mine. But unless you dig and get the gold out, you don't have anything. So it's like that, that we have potential. We have a destiny and we have potential. But it is up to us to endeavor as well, and that will please Krishna in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada often said, recently I heard him say on a tape, in a lecture, that, actually now they're DVDs, or MP3s, and now he said on MP3, that Arjuna did not sit on his chariot and smoke ganja and expect Krishna to do everything for him. You know, he said, don't sit down and just smoke ganja. He kept saying it over and over again, because who was he preaching to, hippies? Said, he did not just say, okay, I'm going and smoking ganja and everything will come to me. So we have to be responsible to try to serve and please Krishna to the best of our ability. And then for the result, we depend on him. And before we do the work, we pray, please give me the ability to do this work for you. And after, if it comes successful, thank you, Krishna, for helping me to do this. And if it doesn't come successful, thank you, Krishna, for showing me my mistakes or whatever. So, yes. Yeah, the responsibility is ours, and that's why Arjuna got the credit in the Battle of Kurukshetra, because he fought for Krishna. That was his idea, beginning of Bhagavad Gita. I'll not fight. I'll just do yoga. I'll do this meditation yoga, he was thinking. That is higher than fighting for you. And Krishna said, no, fighting for me is the highest. And even if you try to do yoga, you won't be able to yoga, because your nature is to fight. Your nature is to be a kshatriya. So you can't go against your nature. So we are meant to use our nature and our abilities and whatever strength we have in Krishna's service. And then for the result, we depend on him. So the Pandavas are the example. They were very responsible. They didn't just sit down and say, okay, Krishna, you're our friend. So great. We got a great life now. We don't have to do anything. No, they worked very hard for Krishna. Prabhupada says they weren't idle parasites, but they were working very hard. Okay, so we better go on. All these verses in this first class will be about why Krishna appears. So why does he appear? Because he loves his devotees, and that his devotees pray, and Krishna expresses his love for his devotees by answering their prayers. He comes, their prayer is, please come. And all of these prayers today by Kunti, she's explaining how different devotees prayed for Krishna and he came. Excuse me. So verse 32. Kechirahura jamjatam punya shloka shikirtaye yaropya syangavaye malyasye vachandanam. Some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings. And others say he is born to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees. You appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills. So Yadu is mentioned here. Yadu's father was Yayati. He had five children. Yadu was oldest. And Yayati was cursed to become an old man. So he asked each of his sons, you please accept my curse. He could get out of his curse if one of his sons would exchange their youth for his old age. So first he asked Yadu, and Yadu said, no, I won't do that. You know why Yadu refused? Because of his devotional service. It was actually, he knew Krishna is going to be born in his family. Now, if he was an old man, he couldn't have children. So therefore, he said, no. He said, no, I will not accept this curse. So therefore, Yadu is famous as being the forefather of the Aru dynasty, at the beginning of the Aru dynasty in which Krishna appeared. Now Chandan is sandalwood. The sandalwood used to appear in the Malaya Hills in Malaysia also. Malaysia used to be famous for sandalwood, for Chandan. And so that's the point is that that made Malaysia famous. It was very famous because of its sandalwood. So the Aru dynasty is famous in the same way because of Krishna. Krishna is like sandalwood appearing in the Aru dynasty and making it fragrant and famous and beautiful. And so Prabhupada said previously, Malaysia was famous for that. Now Malaysia is famous for rubber. Instead of sandalwood, they're growing rubber plants. And when I was there last month, I had a flight. A delayed flight. So I had to stay in Malaysia overnight. And I saw piles of rubber tires, piles of tires near the airport. So that is their fame now. Of course, they're not famous anymore because tires are not such a wonderful thing. But that is what they're doing now instead of growing sandalwood. So this verse explains that Krishna came to glorify pious kings and please King Yadu. So Punya Shloka Shakirtaye, to glorify the pious or the devotees. So in the same way, he becomes the son of Mother Yashoda to glorify Yashoda. He appears in the dynasty of Yadu to glorify Yadu. And Prabhupada said that's all Krishna has to do. That's all he likes to do, is glorify his devotees. So, and he said in the same way that that's all the devotees like to do, is glorify Krishna. So he said, Prabhupada said, if you dedicate your life for glorifying Krishna, Krishna is ready to glorify you. And we can see in the case of Srila Prabhupada that his whole life was for glorifying Krishna. And now he's famous. He's glorified by Krishna. So the other word here, it says Punya Shloka. Punya Shloka means the devotee who is expert in glorifying Krishna. Krishna is Uttama Shloka. And he's being glorified by the devotee. So Prabhupada tells us, how can we become Punya Shloka and dear to Krishna, like King Yadu, that we should chant Hare Krishna and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So let us continue hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And the reasons why Krishna comes, the first reason is to glorify his devotees. Now let's hear the second reason. Verse 33. Apare vasudevasya devakyam yachato brigada jastamasya kshemaya adhaya cha suradisham. Others say, since both Vasudeva and Devaki prayed for you, you have taken your birth as their son. Undoubtedly you are unborn, yet you take your birth for their welfare and to kill those who are envious of the demigods. So in these prayers, we're hearing the names of Krishna's great devotees. Now, I'll tell you the list so far. Yadu, Devaki, Vasudev, and then before was Yashoda. Now, what do all of these devotees have in common? They all have one thing in common. Devaki, Vasudev, Yadu, and Yashoda. Yes, parental rasa. They're all, and that's, Kunti's also in parental rasa, so she's first glorifying these devotees in parental rasa. She identifies with them. She's glorifying the devotees in parental rasa. So, and she knows if she approaches Krishna in relationship with his devotees, Krishna will be pleased. That's what gives Krishna the most pleasure, is when you glorify his devotees. So Krishna also has unlimited names, and they're all because he has so many devotees, that's why. So he has so many names that are in relation with different devotees. Yashoda Nandan, Devaki Nandan, Nanda, Nanda Nandana, different devotees' names. But as we mentioned in the previous class, if you add all the names together, you get one name, and that is Krishna, because Krishna is all attractive. Doesn't matter who you are, he'll attract you. He'll attract Devaki, Vasudev, Arjuna, the gopis, everyone. That's Krishna. As he says in Gita, everyone follows my path in all respects. So although Krishna actually comes to satisfy his devotees, he also performs other activities. Vathaya chasra disham. He comes to kill the envious, the demons. So this is also mentioned by Kunti in reference to Vasudeva and Devaki, because they were harassed by Kamsa. So therefore they prayed for Krishna to come. So Krishna likes to glorify his devotees and put them in a higher position than himself. Although he's so great that all the universes are coming from him and he can create so many universes, he enters into the womb of Devaki. All the universes are within him. But he goes inside Devaki. So who's greater, Devaki or him? Devaki. Because she has all the universes and Krishna inside of her. And Krishna just has all the universes. So she's greater. He likes to glorify his devotees. And what are some other examples of how Krishna makes his devotee greater than himself? Sometimes devotees can do something Krishna cannot do. Who can give me an example of that? Yes?
Well, he's indirecting in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, you declare this boldly.
Yes, okay.
He values his devotee's truthfulness about his own.
Right, right. Yes, he asked Arjuna to promise that Krishna's devotee would never be vanquished. I was just hearing a lecture just this morning by Prabhupada, and he was saying that one time Krishna broke his promise to uphold the promise of his devotee, Bhishma. In the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna had promised not to fight. And Bhishma said, unless Krishna fights to protect Arjuna, Arjuna will die tomorrow. I promise. So because Bhima made this promise, then Krishna had to fulfill his devotee. His devotee comes first. The devotee's promise will always be fulfilled. Sometimes Krishna may break. And that's why Dronacharya, in the battle of Kurukshetra, the only one way he could be killed is if someone said that your son is dead, Ashwatthama is dead. Then he'll give up his life. So his son wasn't dead, but Krishna told Yudhisthira, now you have to go and tell a lie that Drona's son is dead, otherwise we can't kill him. And because he knew that Drona wouldn't believe him. If Krishna said it, he wouldn't believe him, because sometimes Krishna breaks his promise. So, and Yudhisthira never spoke a lie in his life. So here Krishna was telling, okay, now you have to do this for me. You have to go and speak a lie. But he hesitated, actually. So how can I do this? I never spoke a lie in my life. And I'm famous for that, actually. That's why Jonah would believe Yudhisthira. If Yudhisthira said it, he would believe it. Because he's a devotee of Krishna. So that's okay. So, and also Arjuna was greater than Krishna in the sense that he was the hero of the battle of Kurukshetra. And Krishna was just a chariot driver. Arjuna was out in front. Arjuna was in front, Arjuna and Bhima, they were the heroes of the battle of Kurukshetra. Also, if you look in Ram Lila, Hanuman could do something that Lord Ram couldn't do. He could jump over the ocean, yes. Whereas Ram had to go on a bridge. He had to walk on, not an ordinary bridge, but a bridge nevertheless. So Srila Prabhupada also, he was on a morning walk in Vrindavan, and one devotee said to Prabhupada, so Lord Chaitanya, he preached all over India, but I think he left the rest of the world for you to do. And Prabhupada said, yes. And he said, and for you to do also. It was like that. We also have that responsibility to preach all over the world. Okay, so we've heard two prayers, two verses. Why Krishna comes, first to glorify his devotees, and second, because Vasudeva and Devaki prayed for him. And now third. Paravataranyanye kuvonava ivodata sirantiburiparena jatoyatma kuvartata. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. Okay, so if any of you ever been to Mayapur, from Mayapur to Navadvip or back, then you'll know what it means to have an overloaded boat. With one small boat with maybe 50, 60 people, two goats, 10 bicycles, 4 motorcycles.
A rickshaw
too, maybe sometimes. Yeah, just imagine. And it, you know, there's no sides to the boat, right? It's just, you're just on it. And that's it. And you're going across. Yeah, so the world was, the whole earth was like that 5,000 years ago. It was overburdened. So what is actually, what does it mean that there were too many people? Was it overpopulation that was the problem? As people worry about nowadays, overpopulation? Or what was the problem actually when Krishna was here? I mean, even it's described that King Ugrasena had something like four trillion bodyguards. It was some upper in the trillions. So just imagine one person had more people than the population of the whole earth just to guard him. So could it have been overpopulation? No. The problem was too many demons on the surface, too many sinful people. That was the burden of the earth. When there are devotees, then she doesn't feel any burden. It's a burden of love. When you have wonderful children, then it's like it's a burden, but it's a burden of love. And if you have children that are just causing you trouble your whole life, then it's an actual burden if you have sinful children. So that's how Mother Earth felt. She felt overburdened by the sinful people, all these kings. So therefore, and Brahma, usually Brahma comes and he manages to solve the problem, but and like when all the prachetas were burning the trees all over the earth, Brahma came and stopped them. He intervened. When Priyavrata would not take up the emperorship of the world, Brahma came and convinced him. He intervened. But this time, Brahma couldn't do it. There were too many demons. So he simply had to go to the ocean of milk and meditate on Vishnu. And then Vishnu said, yes, I will come. I will come. Incarnation will come and we will remove the burden of the earth. So here's another reason why Krishna came, to remove the burden of the earth, and also because Lord Brahma prayed for him. In Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Siglani, Prabhupada quoted, when people forget what is religion, then God comes. When Prabhupada was in London, one reporter asked him at the airport, why have you come here? And Prabhupada said, to teach you what you have forgotten. And that is God, Krishna. You have forgotten him. So Srila Prabhupada said, if you just chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, then the world can be changed into Vaikuntha and the burden of the earth will be relieved. So we'll be doing that today again, actually for the next 24 hours from 4 o'clock. We'll be helping to remove the burden of the earth by chanting Hare Krishna. So all of you are welcome to join. So verse 35, another reason why Krishna appeared. Bhavesmin klishamananam avidya kama karma bi shavana smaranarhani karishani tigechana. And yet others say you appeared to rejuvenate devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshipping, and so on, in order that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. So, this is the most important reason for Krishna's appearance. He comes to teach devotional service. Usually we think Lord Chaitanya came to teach us devotional service. So how did Krishna teach devotional service? How did he actually show us devotional service or teach us devotional service?
By example?
By example? Well, not in Vrindavan so much. Maybe in Dwarka more. Even in Dwarka, it would be hard to follow his example, 16,000 wives. Anything else?
Krishna.
Yeah, Krishna.
We can talk.
But that's no Krishna. 5,000 years ago, Krishna. It's very simple, actually. He taught Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. That's how he taught devotional service. He said, "Man mana bhavamad bhakto, you always think of me, become my devotee." So he gave us his teachings in Bhagavad Gita. And another important thing about this verse, the first two lines give us in a nutshell everything in this material world, the whole material existence is explained. Why people work so hard? There's a struggle, first of all, bhavesmin klishamananam, struggle for existence. Everyone, I think, would agree that most people are struggling in this world for existence. Very few are rich. In America, there was a statistic that 45% of America's wealth is in the hands of 5% of the people. And then the rest is in the others. You can see that it's people don't have money. I just also heard recently, 43, 44 million people are having food stamps now in America. They don't have money for food, even, so the government has to give them. And my son and his family are among those people. Food stamps. Because he can't get a job. There's no jobs to get. Very difficult to get a job. So, this is the struggle for existence. Now, why? Why does the struggle exist? Because of vidya, ignorance. And then if you have ignorance, then what comes next is kama. You have desires, material desires. So Prabhupada said this two lines, the whole material existence is explained, and this two lines is worth thousands of years of research work. They're trying to figure out why is there so much problem in this world. Well, here's the answer. Avidya, first of all, ignorance. And what comes after ignorance is kama. We want to enjoy material desires. And if we want to enjoy, what comes next? Karma B. We have to work hard. So avidya, kama, karma B. Out of ignorance, we have material desires, and we will have to work, therefore, very hard to satisfy these desires. So how to get out of the struggle? The next two lines. Shavana, smaranarhani, karishani, tikechana. Hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping. If you do these things, then you will get out of this struggle for existence. Krishna comes to introduce the system by which we can get out of this continuous misery. Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 18th chapter, and the same verse, but a different translation. Every time, place, and circumstance, he'll quote Sarvadharma Paritaja Mamekam Sharanam Vicha, which means abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me. So here, he translates it, you rascal, give up all your nonsense and surrender to me. So the nonsense is a struggle for existence. Give up your useless struggle for existence and just surrender to me. Hear about me, chant about me. Prabhupada says, very easy. If you can't chant, if your mind is so disturbed you can't even think of Krishna, then he says, okay, just go inside the temple, look at the deity, just see Krishna. Appreciate how beautifully he's dressed. And if you just do that, then that's enough, Prabhupada said. He said, just like in the beginning also, one of the first lectures Prabhupada ever gave on chanting the holy name, he said, even a child can take part in the chanting, or even a dog can take part in it. And so, as I travel, I hear stories about dogs going on Harinam. In Melbourne, was it Melbourne or Sydney, one of those places? Melbourne. And they go on Harinam, and then the dog starts following them, and the dog keeps going. And then at the last place I was, Germany, there was a devotee, Aditi, she's going on Harinam in Mayapur. And she said they would go by boat every day to one place, and on the other side, there would be a dog that would meet them and go along with them the whole way on the Harinam. And the other dogs would try to attack that dog, the dog's in the way, and this other dog, the dog in the Harinam, would just take shelter of the devotees. And it was like when I was visiting Ukraine. The first festival in 1998, it was. It was their first festival. I was there, and they just had rented some camp, some big park-like. And in that park were so many dogs. But there was one dog who was following our Harinam. And at Mangalarti time, we had like 500-600 devotees. And the dog would come and offer obeisances on all the shoes. He wouldn't go in the temple room. He would just go on the shoes. You know how dogs go down? But this dog would do that on all the shoes. So, and all the, there were many dogs, and this dog was with us, and the other dogs would just do what dogs do, you know, they would just pass urine everywhere and whatever, fight and all that. But this dog was different. So sometimes it happens that we see animals. So where I was in Germany, there was one cat there also who used to come for every time it was time for lunch, we would eat outside, and the cat would come and beg for prasadam. And there's in Malaysia, I think John Ananda would have stories about the animals. He wrote a book actually about animals in Krishna consciousness. And there was one cow in Malaysia who used to come for class and sit on the Mataji's side. And in Orissa in India, there was a bull who used to come for Bhagavat Sapta, the 7 days. And he knew the exact time, he knew the day. And he would come in the morning and come in the evening. And then the next year they were wondering, is this bull going to come again? And sure enough, nobody told him. He just came on the right day at the right time, sat on the men's side, and he listened to the Bhagavat Kata.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Arisa was in the picture in newspaper.
Arisa, what?
Yeah, 2 years in a row. I don't know if what happened after that, but I know it was 2 years in a row this bull came. They showed it. I saw his picture somewhere. Maybe it was in Jalananda's book too, I don't know. But, so it's not that difficult to be Krishna conscious. But Prabhupada also described that these animals that are like close to the temple or devotees' pets, said they are fallen devotees from their last life. If you make a really bad offense, then that's what you'll become, an animal in your next life, pet of a devotee. And I know one pet also that was a cat that was living with one devotee lady, and this cat used to wake this lady up for Mangalarti and, you know, japa and everything. The cat was very regulated, and and then one day the cat came and was trying to tell the lady something, and then she went and followed the cat, and she saw the cat was stretched out in front of her deities and had left his body. So the cat, well, went back to Godhead. He's right, just, you know, stretched out in obeisances with his head on the floor like that, like the men do. And so, anyway, these animals are very, actually very special if they're devotees' pets, and so they may go back to Godhead, and we may stay here. Actually, it's quite possible that our pets may make it before us, especially if we're attached to the pets, and we could become one of those in our next life. So I have to be careful. So Prabhupada said, okay, even an animal can do this, but if you're more intelligent, you can offer prayers. Not just sit and look at the deities, you can offer prayers. And if you're expert, you can do deity worship. So this is very nice. And this is arhani, shavana, smarana, arhana. That is, doing the worship. Then Prabhupada in the purport said, oh, listen to this now. 9 process of devotional service. The Lord, out of his causeless mercy, because he is more merciful to the suffering living beings than they can expect, appears before them and renovates the principles of devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, praying, cooperating, and surrendering. So, did you hear one that sounded different than usual?
Rendering.
No, that's the same.
Cooperating.
Cooperating, yeah. Cooperating instead of friendship. So friendship means cooperating. Cooperating. And then Prabhupada said, this particular type of mercy is bestowed upon a living being by the Lord in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we'll go to verse 16, which is an expansion of all these processes. Shinvanti gayanti ginanta bhikshnasha smaranti nandanti tavehitam jana deva pasyantya chirena tavakam bhava pravaha paramam param pujam. O Krishna, those continuously hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental activities or take pleasure in others doing so certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. Shinvanti, hearing. Prabhupada said, if that's all you do, anytime there's a class, just come and hear. That's all you have to do. You'll get perfection. even if you don't understand what is being said. When I was with Srila Prabhupada in Calcutta in the 70s, he used to sometimes give class in Bengali, and we wouldn't understand what he was saying, but we just had such a wonderful time just watching him, because every gesture was like from the spiritual world. It was something like we never saw. First of all, how he was moving was something very extraordinary, and then just to see him, you couldn't... I would always try to figure it out. Is he... He looked like he was projected from somewhere. He didn't look like he was actually there. He looked like he was from another dimension. And we would try to figure out, where is he? Is he here? Or is he somewhere else? Or, you know, and we would just watch him. But with our intelligence, we could never figure out anything. It was just always beyond our intelligence. We couldn't understand him. And so that was Prabhupada. But anyway, the point is that if you simply hear, then that will help you. And you may not pronounce things properly, like Jayananda, he couldn't. Prabhupada was trying to teach him his Gayatri Mantra, and then after a couple of times, Prabhupada just gave up. And he couldn't, but he was such a saintly devotee that Prabhupada told everyone to celebrate his disappearance day and put his picture on the Jagannath Rath cart, because he used to make the first carts for Lord Jagannath. So the chanting and hearing is very, very important. So there is one verse from Vaishnava Chintamani. Amongst the different limbs of bhakti, chanting of the holy name is the most efficient, effective. Ashtanga yoga necessitates much arduous physical and mental exercise in order to remember the Lord Vishnu. But simply moving the lips and chanting is the best form of glorification and remembrance of the Lord. So better to chant than to do this impersonal meditation. And then, but how? A bhikshasha, continuously. Not that for some days I chant and then some days I go back to my own bad habits. So now when we're trying to chant, sometimes it's difficult for us. We can't just keep on chanting. While we're chanting, our mind goes away somewhere else. And so that's a problem right now. It's a struggle. But if we keep on trying to chant, then one day we'll come to the level where our mind will be our friend. Now our mind is not our friend. It takes us away. We don't know, how did I start thinking about all those other things while I was chanting? We can't even figure out how we got there. We might start at one point and then go to another, and go way out by the time we realize, uh-oh, I'm supposed to be chanting. Our mouth will be moving, but our mind will be really somewhere else. So then... But at one point, you'll come to the point where your mind is your friend. And then you might even be a little bit distracted sometimes, but then your mind will take you back to Krishna. Your mind will just keep taking you back, and you'll think, well, how did I think about Krishna like that? It'll be the opposite. So we're waiting for that day to come, and that is on higher levels of devotional service. So then after, what happens after we hearing, chanting, nandanti, we'll be happy. Prabhupada said this is a test of spiritual advancement, that you'll can't wait till you get your hands in your japamala in the morning. Wow, I can't wait. Not like I was reading a book by Gaur Govinda. Okay, finished. Chanting finished for today. No more. Finished my 16 rounds. Now I can do something. Now can I do whatever I want? No, not like that. Not like that. That we want to chant. Nandanti. And that the test is that we like to chant. Nandanti. We get pleasure about chanting about Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna. So then what happens next? When we get pleasure then, Pashyanti, we'll see Krishna's lotus feet. Pashyanti. So Prabhupada, in the purport in the beginning, says, Supreme Lord Sri Krishna cannot be seen by our present conditional vision. In order to see him, one has to change his present vision by developing a different condition of life, full of spontaneous love of Godhead. So, the verse also says, when you will see Krishna, ta eva pashyanti achirena. Achirena, Prabhupada says, not after millions of years, very soon. And that's why I joined. I wanted to see Krishna face to face. Devotees told me, you will see him face to face. So, in those days, when we first joined, they gave us the impression that it was just a matter of weeks or months or maybe a year or two, you know. not long, but here I am 41 years later, and I'm still trying. But I do see Krishna when I go in the temple, and he's smiling. I see him smiling. So, yes, the result is there. Very soon, we'll see Krishna's lotus feet. And then what happens next after you see Krishna's lotus feet? Pava prava ho aparamam. Your material life is finished. If you actually see Krishna's feet, then no more problems, no more struggle, no more worries. Why? Because you're with Krishna. When you're with Krishna, then there's no problems. When you forget Krishna, then the problem starts. Then the problem begins. So this is the instruction of Kunti. The lotus feet are to be worshipped. There is a purport in 1.11.26 where it says, pure devotees are always hankering after the lotus feet of the Lord. Lotus has a kind of honey which is transcendentally relished by the devotees. So they are like the bees, always after the honey. So today, 24-hour kirtan, holy name is actually the lotus feet of the Lord. None different. So we'll be going after the honey of the holy name today, starting today for the next 24 hours. We'll go to the next verse. Oh, now I want to ask you a question first. Why do we serve Krishna? Why do we do service to Krishna?
Purification.
Yes?
It's our constitutional position.
Very good. Anything else? Yeah? Yes, that's very good. Very good. Actually, our motive should be to please Krishna. That's why we should do service. I want to make Krishna happy. And that's our constitutional position, as you said. And it will certainly bring purification, as you said. But yes, to awaken our love. To please him, actually. And normally, we have time between this class and the next class a whole day, so you can do this homework, but today we don't. So you'll have to just keep doing it till next year when I come back. Or actually, till tomorrow, the Sunday feast, and then I'll ask you again. We'll ask about that homework. So the homework for today is, whatever you're doing, try to do whatever you're doing with thinking, okay, this is simply to please Krishna. I want to do this. I want to chant my rounds to make Krishna happy. I want to cook to please Krishna. I want to do this kirtan just for Krishna. Not thinking, okay, well, I like this, I don't like that. And that guy's a good singer and that one's not. And he's going too fast. And all this commentary going on at the same time. But just to please Krishna, okay. Here we are, and we're chanting, and we're in the moment. We just want to please Krishna now. So that's your task for today. And I will ask at the Sunday feast lecture, if any of you are there, then I'll ask you if you did it, and otherwise, just keep doing it until next year when I come back. That will be your 1 year's homework, trying to do everything to please Krishna. Okay, so then the next last verse for this class, verse 37. Apyadyanastam sakite hita prabho jihasasi svit suhida nujivino yesham nachanyat bhavata param bhujar parayanam rajasiyo jitam hasam. Oh my Lord, you have executed all duties yourself. Are you leaving us today, though we are completely dependent on your mercy and have no one else to protect us now when all kings are at enmity with us? So Kunti is very much worried that Krishna is leaving. She's coming to the point. She's giving a very direct request now to Krishna. You don't think that we're safe. You're thinking we're safe, so you can leave us. Before we were in danger, so you were always staying with us. And now you think, okay, you're okay, I'm going. No, we're not okay. We need you. Everyone's our enemy now because we killed everyone in the whole world in this battle of Kurukshetra. All the kings are dead. Their family, their relatives are there. So please don't leave. So Prabhupada in the purport says Pandavas are most fortunate because with all good luck they were entirely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. In the material world, to be dependent on the mercy of someone else is the utmost sign of misfortune, but in the case of our transcendental relation with the Lord, it is the most fortunate case when we can live completely dependent on Him. So, Prabhupada, here again, it's a little bit very similar to your question that you asked today. We'll hear what Prabhupada says. The highest achievement of perfect civilization is to work with valor. Valor means courage, you know. But at the same time, depend completely on the Lord. Work and depend. The Pandavas were the ideal executors of this standard of civilization. Undoubtedly, they were completely dependent on the goodwill of Lord Shri Krishna, but they were not idle parasites of the Lord. As Prabhupada would say, they did not go somewhere and sit and smoke ganja and expect Krishna to do everything. They were not like that. He said it 3 times in one lecture, I think. Some devotees must have been doing that in those days. You never know. You know, Prabhupada was saying that. So what does this mean? Work with valor and depend on Krishna. Yes, actually, it's in today's class, not a previous class. So there's a nice Christian prayer by St. Thomas. I don't know where he lived, but anyway, he's a famous saint. And here's a nice prayer that he said. You should pray. You know where he's from?
I don't either.
Pray as if everything depends on the Lord, and work as if everything depends on you. That's the thing. Prabhupada also said, one time Jadarani asked Prabhupada, should we pray for a Sankirtan vent? We need a Sankirtan vent. Should we pray to Krishna, please give us a Sankirtan vent? Prabhupada said, yes, you can pray, but your prayer should be accompanied by your work. It's not that you just, okay, give me this, give me that, and you do nothing, and yeah.
He has a following somewhere in South India.
St. Thomas.
Yeah, he had somewhere in the Bible, there was the Gospel of St. Thomas that wasn't included. And they followed this gospel, the Christians. Mm-hmm. And sect, you know.
Oh. Yeah, they don't. Yeah, India is. Even Christ went to India, they say. And his tomb is there in India, in Kashmir.
Kashmir,
his tomb is there. Now, last I heard, he went and studied Upanishads in India. So, yeah, I mean, the Indians wouldn't kill him, you know. India was Krishna conscious. So they would appreciate the work he was doing. But other people didn't. In other parts, they weren't so civilized as India. So, yes. So, yes, these are all St. Francis. Prabhupada liked St. Francis, who went to visit a monastery in Australia, Sydney, Australia. Yeah, and he spoke to the monks there, and they were following St. Francis, and he asked, so what does St. Francis teach? And they said, yes, he teaches that the trees, the animals, everyone is your brother. Oh, I said, yes, that is perfect God consciousness. That's very good. He was a great devotee of the Lord. So Prabhupada, he really appreciated this. He's different.
A famous prayer by St. Augustine.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like infamous, really, because he said he had a lot of problems in his youth with lusty desires.
Oh, really?
So his prayer, he used to say his prayer when he was a young man, Lord, make me chaste. But not just yet.
Yeah, that's. I think a lot of Indians pray like that as well. That I will certainly give up everything to you when I'm old. when everything's taken away anyway, so what's the use? You know? Yeah, when you're young, you have everything. That's when you have to give up everything. And so yes, we gave up our youth for Prabhupada. Give up our youth, and that's very difficult to give up. Very difficult. So here Prabhupada says, they were all highly qualified, both by personal character and by physical activities. Still, they always looked for the mercy of the Lord because they knew that every living being is dependent by constitutional position. Perfection of life is therefore to become dependent on the will of the Lord instead of becoming falsely independent in the material world. So those who try to become falsely independent are called anatta, or without any guardian. Whereas those who are completely dependent on the will of the Lord are called sanata, or those having someone to protect them. Right. So Prabhupada also says that all these Pandavas were Mahatmas, great souls in married life. And Queen Kunti was the head of the Mahatmas, mother. So who is a Mahatma? Bhagavad Gita says, Satatam Kirtayanto Mam Yatantascha Didhavata, one who is always chanting Hare Krishna, offering me obeisances, who is endeavoring with great determination. He is a great soul. He is a Mahatma. And married people can also be Mahatmas. And Prabhupada quotes a verse from Bhagavatam 5.5.3. Rishabhadev says, what are the symptoms of a married person who is a Mahatma? Those who are interested in reviving Krishna consciousness and increasing their love of God do not like to do anything not related to Krishna. They don't want to mingle with people busy maintaining their bodies, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. They are not attached to their homes, although they may be householders. Nor are they attached to wives, children, friends, or wealth. But at the same time, they're not indifferent to the execution of their duties. They're interested in collecting only enough money to keep the body and soul together. Yes, so there is one. I can think of so many examples in ISKCON of Grihastha Mahatmas. I know in India, there was one householder couple. Her name is Rachitambra. She's my god sister, you know. And she's sick now, yeah?
She's sick, yeah.
I heard.
She called out, but she had some blood clots.
Blood clots, yeah, I saw on Facebook. They were asking to pray for her. In her youth, when she was married, she had a child, or she still has that daughter. When the daughter was 4 years old, husband and wife, they went to start a temple in Gujarat, a farm. It's a farm. And there was no house or anything there, but they just went, and they were living under a tree, and they were okay until monsoon came. And then, so then it started raining and pouring, and they were still under the tree, and so they decided, okay, what to do? We'll chant. So they were chanting Hare Krishna in the rain under the tree. And then one rich man came and said, oh, I will build a house for you.
Wow.
And he built a house and stocked it with rice and all kinds of things too. Yeah. So that was the beginning of the temple at Gujarat, the farm, Gujarati farm. Farm in Gujarat. So many Grihasthas were like that. I mean, Prabhupada, our training was, we went to the tent, we joined. We were also married, my husband and I. And we learned how to do everything, you know, cooking and distributing Back to Godhead magazine and doing the lectures and whatever, how to keep a temple. And then we were just sent out to start a temple. And it was like, I think we were 1 year devotees, and then they sent us out to start a temple. And that was how it was. I was initiated, my husband wasn't. And we were out there just, you know, all by ourselves, no money. They just say, okay, you go there, hitchhike, and then start a temple. And so that's what we did. And Srila Prabhupada, he said in one lecture, and he sent six married couples to London. That is Malati and Shyam Sundara, Gurdas and Jamuna, and one more, I was Mukunda and Janaki. They started, and Saraswati, little Saraswati, they all went and started the temple in London. And he said that my spiritual master, Shibhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he was sending brahmacharis and sannyasis, and I'm sending grihasthas out preaching. So Prabhupada was very liberal. He was very equal to everyone. He gave everyone a chance. And he saw that it's an emergency situation and everyone was needed to spread this Krishna conscious movement. And he gave examples, even of the 12 Mahajans, 7 are married. Brahma, Prahlad, Bali Maharaj, they're all married people. Of the Panchatattva, 4 out of 5 were Grihasthas. Only Gadadhar was sannyas his whole life. So it's possible to be married and also be Krishna conscious. Other paths do not allow this. The path of the Mayavadis, impersonalists, you have to be a sannyasi to be a member of theirs. And other paths, only the bhakti path allows for married life. So In her prayers, Kunti is feeling great separation from Krishna. Prabhupada says she felt separation like a thunderbolt, and her whole prayer is to try to persuade the Lord to stay with him. So she's giving many reasons now that you've come for Brahma, you've come for all these people, now why not for us also? Now you should stay, we're your devotees, you should stay here with us. And the second reason, don't think we're safe, all of the kings have left us, and we're your intimate friends, so you have to stay. She's giving so many reasons. And Prabhupada was talking about, there were some at that time, 5,000 years ago, who never actually saw Krishna, but they just, like the wives of the other side, the crews, the Kaurava wives, they never really saw Krishna, but they heard about him, and they were always talking about him. So Prabhupada said that we can also do that now. We're in the same position as these people 5,000 years ago who were there at his time but never saw him. They were always talking about him. So we can do that also, hearing, chanting, remembering, just like Kunti's recommending, and experience the presence of Krishna. So to review, the homework for tomorrow is to try to please Krishna today in whatever you're doing. Try to just keep, okay, I'm doing this to please Krishna. Keep that in your thoughts, why you're doing something. So we'll stop this class here. Are there any questions or comments on this class? And then we'll have like a 10-minute break, and then we'll start the next class. Any questions on this? Oh, yes.
I was just thinking that maybe there's a third aspect, like we may depend too much on Krishna's things for us, or
right.
We may depend too much on our own
right.
ability.
Yeah, what's the balance?
But then the third thing, I'm not at all referring to Rajatambra and the family, that we might depend too much on other people to provide for us, or the government, or...
Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah, Prabhupada didn't... like it so much if we, you know, depended on the government so much, unless it was an emergency situation. He didn't like us. He preferred everybody to be self-independent. And if you were a married person, he expected that you had to work and maintain, he expected the husband to work and maintain the family. That was his expectation. If you're in the temple, then you're expected to do all the things, you know, 24 hours. Like if you have any money, you give it to the temple. You don't keep anything separate if you're living in the temple.
Yeah.
And then that's different. And we were all in the temple, actually.
Yeah.
Married people, there was no difference practically between brahmacharis and grihastas because we also had no money. Whatever we had, when we joined, we would give everything to the temple. And we depended on the temple for everything. Now, I remember when I was, I was a musician, so I sold my cello to pay the rent of 1 month's rent for the temple. And then after 6 months of being in the Boston temple, then Satsarup called us and said, I'm sending you to Florida. And that was, Boston was at the topmost north, and Florida is the top, bottom south. So what did he do? He took us, put us on the highway, and we had to hitchhike. That's how I'm sending you to Florida. Sending you. I'm sending you, right? Well, you know, if he's sending us, he should at least give us a bus ticket.
Yeah.
Wrong. Not. Put us on the road to hitchhike. So we really had to depend on Krishna a lot those days because we really didn't have anything. We had no money. Temple had no money. And we were just... That's just what we expected. And those, now it's different. Now it's quite different.
It's very different now. It's
very
so
different.
Different.
Yeah. No, you can't expect that. I mean, it's not, and the days are different too.
Yeah.
The days are, not only we are different, but the time is different too. You know, the movement, you know, we were a bunch of hippies, so, you know, we hitchhiked, it was, you know, okay. They didn't know who we were.
That's what
we
did, though.
Yeah, so we had to do. And, you know, and but it was quite strange because we didn't even have saris and dhotis. We were wearing sheets. And who's going to pick us up on the road in yellow sheets and no suitcases? We had boxes, you know, cardboard boxes with our stuff. But someone picked us up. It didn't take long, you know. It was Krishna, really. Krishna's mercy. Yeah, I think, and now it's like devotees who are in the other, now devotees, they have money and things, so it's different. It's different now. I remember there was, in India, there was one man, and he became, I think, the prime minister even, or of India 1 year. And he said, yes, I remember the devotees. One time, my car ran out of gas, and the devotee picked me up and took me somewhere. And so it was, now we're more established as part of the society. And Prabhupada expected that also. He expected that devotees should have, if you're married, you know, there came a time when he said, now, if you get married, you have to be able to maintain your wife. Somehow or other, he hadn't expected temple to maintain you. Unless, of course, you just give everything and you're working 24 hours for the temple, then that's a different story. It's different. So, yeah, it's not good, but I think now, it's very difficult to live without depending on the government in some way or other. I think here you get free medical care or something, and in America, you know, there's food stamps if you don't have money. Now it's really hard because the times are so difficult.
You can even get a free cell phone with 250 minutes a month.
Who gets that?
In America.
Who gets that?
Anyone who has makes less than 16,000.
Okay, well, I'll have to tell my son. Thank you for telling me. Because he has a problem. He had to leave his cell phone because he couldn't pay for it.
Yeah, no, it's completely free. You just have to fill out a form. Tell them I'm in SafeLink
Wireless. Well, you can write it down for me after class.
Yeah.
Get free healthcare. Didn't Obama bring in free healthcare?
I don't know. I don't know how that works. I don't know if that works. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be.
You got it through.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what it means.
No.
Yeah, what it means.
We got something through about that. I thought there were background.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you can give me the link for that. Yeah. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so we'll meet you in about 10 minutes. What's the time now? Quarter past. So come back at 11:25 and we'll have our second class. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.